I was sitting alone in my living room with piles of documents strewn all over my glass coffee table and a cognac in my hand. Today had been a 14-hour day. Every time I thought of contacting her, I forced my nose back into my work. My eyes gave out before my desire. Graham, I worked late. Soraya, you know the old saying, all work and no play. Graham, makes Graham a wealthy boy. Soraya, maybe, but what good is wealth if you have no time to enjoy it? I tossed back the remnant of my glass. I'd heard those exact words too many times to count. From my grandmother. Graham, have you thought about what I asked? Soraya, are you referring to my forthcoming calendar? Wise ass. It was driving me nuts to know she was out tonight and had refused to commit to not seeing other people. Yesterday I had told her that it was a deal-breaker. At the time, I was trying to push her into an all-or-nothing decision in my favor. But after the last 24 hours, I was certain there was no way in hell I could do an open relationship with this woman. Usually it's me who avoids committing. I was getting a taste of my own medicine, I suppose. Graham. I am? Soraya. How about this? You'll come with me to a social event of my choosing, and I'll attend one of your choosing. If you still want to see me exclusively after, I'm game. What did she think? That my spending time with her friends was going to make me realize we were so vastly different that it could never work? Or was it the other way around? She wouldn't fit into my lifestyle. Clearly she overestimated the extent in which I give a fuck about what people think in either camp. Graham. It's entirely unnecessary, but if that makes you happy, I'll do it. When can I attend a social event of your choosing? Soraya. Thursday night. Tig and Delia are having a party at their tattoo shop. It's the one-year anniversary of the grand opening. Graham. Friday night, the Pink Ribbon Gala at the Met. It's an annual fundraiser I support. Soraya. A gala, huh? I'll have to dye my tips to match my fancy dress. Graham. Is it a date? Soraya. Two dates. And yes? That night I slept better than I had the last week. As usual, Sunday afternoon I visited my grandmother. She had me take her shopping and then made me one of my favorite meals. It was generally my only homemade meal each week. Monday morning I was up early and ran 7 miles instead of my usual morning 4. As I headed for the train station, I realized how much I was looking forward to seeing Soraya. When her stop came and went, and she didn't get on, I pouted. Then called my secretary to give her a list of things to do before I arrived. I knew it wasn't possible to accomplish all of them, but at least it gave me an excuse to unload my frustration on someone. That day I was especially cranky. By 5 o'clock I found myself again writing to ask Ida. Dear Ida, there's a woman who I look forward to seeing on the train every day. This morning she wasn't there. I think she might be intentionally avoiding me because she's unable to fight her sexual attraction any longer and is worried she'll give in and let me have my way with her. How can I be sure? Celibate in Manhattan. 20 minutes later, a response popped up in my inbox. Dear celibate, get a hold of yourself. Contrary to what it appears you may believe, the world does not revolve around you. Perhaps this woman had an early morning doctor's appointment to refill her birth control pills. Something a celibate man like yourself might appreciate. That is, if you are ever afforded the opportunity to break that vow of celibacy. Perhaps you should take a different train for a while. Better yet, take a trip to your own physician for some testing. On the off chance that you have an opportunity with this mysterious train woman, you'll want to be prepared. My day had already been monopolized, thinking about why she wasn't on the train this morning. Fucking great. Now it would be impossible to think about anything else but coming inside of her, for the entire night. Soraya never showed up on the train the following 2 days, either. I got the feeling she had chosen to intentionally avoid me until our date. Thank God tonight was the night of the party at the tattoo shop. Otherwise, I might have lost my damn mind. I was about to explode in more ways than one. My emotions were out of control, and it no longer felt healthy to hold everything in. There was only one person I could trust with details of my personal life. I normally never called my grandmother during the week, but for some reason I felt like I needed her to set me straight today before I made a total ass of myself tonight. Pushing the pile of papers on my desk aside, I picked up the phone. It rang 3 times before she answered. "Graham, are you all right?" "Everything is fine, Mimi." "You don't normally call me on a Thursday."
"I know."
"What's going on? You seemed preoccupied last Sunday. Is something wrong?"
"Nothing is wrong."
"Well, what is it?"
Letting out a deep breath, I cut to the chase. "Am I a bad person?"
"What kind of a question is that?"
"There's this woman I've been seeing. She seems to distrust me, and I have to wonder if there's a legitimate reason for that. Maybe I'm not good for her. Maybe I'm not good for anyone."
Never one to mince words, Mimi laughed and said, "You do have a tendency to be a dick, sweetheart. But from what you tell me, that's par for the course when it comes to your business dealings. Dealing with a woman, on the other hand, is a whole different ball game. And you've certainly played the field."
"That's the thing. I have. But this one is different. It feels different. I don't even know how to explain it. It makes no sense, really. We're nothing alike at all. She's from Brooklyn, an Italian hot-tempered loose cannon with multicolored hair. She calls me out on stuff. She can even be downright mean sometimes. Yet I can't get enough of her. But I can tell she doesn't trust me. I don't know how to get through to her."
Mimi snorted. "I'm assuming by get through, you also mean she hasn't allowed you to have your way with her?"
"She hasn't allowed anything to happen in that area, no."
"You're just not used to women keeping their legs closed. There is such a thing as a lady with self-respect, you know. I think I like this girl."
I sighed into the phone as she continued.
"It takes time to see people for who they really are. You need to be yourself and have patience, and eventually she will see the real you."
"But what if the real me isn't good for her? What if I'm toxic?"
"Who said that?"
"I don't know if I am capable of love anymore."
"Just the fact that you even care, Graham, is a good sign. If it's the right person, we're all capable of it. You fell in love with that Genevieve, didn't you?"
Just the mention of her name made my stomach sour. "Look where that got me."
"You know what I think?"
"What?"
"I think you've been trying so hard to control everything, intentionally picking the wrong people just so you won't get hurt. And now you're starting to believe that you're incapable of anything more. You're beginning to believe your own lies."
"Maybe."
"I think this girl, what's her name?"
"Soraya."
"Soraya, huh. Pretty."
I closed my eyes and twirled my watch around my wrist. "She is."
"Anyway, I think this girl is a wake-up call for you. That we don't always have control over things. Just go with the flow. Let things happen on their own. Give up control. But more importantly, for God's sake, don't be an asshole."
I couldn't help but laugh out loud. "I'll keep that in mind, Mimi." The realization hit that Soraya was definitely not the first woman in my life to tell it like it is.
Chapter 9. Soraya. Avoiding Graham over the past couple of days had been really difficult. But I felt like I needed to step back for my own good. The truth was, I couldn't trust myself. Any little bit of contact might have pushed me over the edge. It was bad enough that I thought about him all day and pleasured myself to images of him at night. For all I knew, the second I gave in, he would be gone. And I didn't want this to end. I loved the excitement of wondering what he'd say or do, wondering what would happen next. I couldn't risk giving in too soon and losing this feeling, or losing him. I hate it that a part of me still felt like he might disappear once we slept together. Nevertheless, I was prepared for it whenever it might happen because I didn't really trust myself around him. Even though I vowed not to have sex with him yet, I made sure my legs were shaved and that I was wearing the laciest lingerie I had. I also made sure my birth control was up to date. I poured orange juice and rum into the punch bowl that sat atop the buffet table we'd set up in the tattoo shop. Delia had hung up festive red Christmas lights as decorations, even though it wasn't the holidays. Bob Marley was playing, while she set out some appetizers. Tig was working on the last customer in the back before closing for the party. A makeshift bar was stationed in the corner, with our friend Leroy serving as both the bartender and DJ. Butterflies swarmed in my stomach at the thought of Graham meeting my friends. I couldn't imagine him walking in here with his million-dollar suit, though. That was going to be a funny sight. I hoped that Tig and Delia didn't think I was crazy for bringing him here. They were already wary of him because of my initial descriptions of his glowing personality. It had been hard to backtrack and explain to them why I was suddenly enamored with Mr. Big Prick. They still called him by that name. Checking my phone incessantly, I noticed that Graham was about 5 minutes late. People were starting to arrive, but he was all I could think about. I started to distract myself by putting out some candy. That was when I heard Delia's voice. "Please tell me that Clark Kent hottie who just walked in isn't Mr. Big Prick, because I might have to fight you for him." My heart started beating out of control at the sight of Graham in the doorway. Oh my God. He was dressed nothing like I'd ever seen before. There was no suit. Instead, he was wearing a black polo shirt that fit his chest like a glove made for pectoral muscles, along with a pair of dark jeans. His hair was slicked back off to the side in a way that made him look younger. And he was wearing glasses. God, the bespectacled look really worked for him. It worked for me. A little too much. My body reacted more with every step he took toward me, the punch of his signature scent nearly knocking the wind out of me. While I had been trying to restrain myself, Graham pulled me into an easy hug and buried his mouth in my neck.
"I missed you so fucking much, Soraya."
The strained sound of his words against my skin were enough to do me in. The night hadn't even started, and my panties were already wet. I was ready to pull him into a supply closet. "Jesus, grab a hold of yourself." Graham's brown eyes were searing into mine from beneath the lenses. They trailed down to my cleavage and back up again. I had dyed the ends of my hair purple and wore a similar color dress to match. He took a fistful of strands and gently tugged, whispering seductively in my ear.
"Purple, huh?"
I cleared my throat. "Yes."
"You told me the red signified anger. What does the purple mean?"
"What's with the glasses?"
"Answer me first."
"Purple represents confusion or a dilemma." He smirked.
"I see."
"So, why the glasses?"
"Honestly, I haven't slept well. I've been worried about you, but trying to give you space. When I don't get my sleep, my eyes dry up. The glasses are more comfortable than contacts."
We stood there, gazing into each other's eyes for nearly a full minute before Delia interrupted our moment. "Well, if it isn't Mr. Big Prick..." "Crap." Graham's eyes widened as he offered her his hand before looking at me with an amused expression.
"I guess my reputation has preceded me. I'll choose to believe that Soraya came up with that nickname based on the literal and not figurative translation of prick."
"It was what I called you before we met, back in the days when I was holding your phone."
"And what made you come up with that name specifically?"
"You reminded me of a jerkier Mr. Big from that show Sex and the City. Thus, Mr. Big Prick.
Graham slid his hand along my waist. And who would you be? Slutty Samantha?
I squinted in surprise. You've watched that show?
My mother used to watch it.
That's funny. I smiled.
Now that you know me a little better, do I still remind you of that guy?
Well, you do have a driver, so I guess there are some similarities.
He wriggled his forehead. Although, there's no sex in our city, is there?
When I glared at him, he playfully kissed me on the cheek, then ran his hand down my back, causing a shiver to run through me. This was going to be a long night. After introducing Graham to Leroy and a few of the other guests, I brought him over to meet Tig. My friend had a cigarette hanging out of his mouth when he offered Graham a handshake.
Mr. Big Prick, how the fuck are you?
Graham rolled his eyes.
I'm well. You must be Tig.
Anyway, I don't know if Soraya told you, but she's like my sister. And seeing as though she doesn't have a blood brother or even a father who's worth a piece of shit in her life, that means that if you hurt her, I'm gonna have to be the one to kick your ass. Just wanted to get that out of the way.
Graham nodded his head slowly in understanding.
I appreciate you looking out for her.
I'm glad we cleared that up.
Tig snickered.
I would ask you if you want a tat on the house while you're here, but something tells me you're not into ink.
I'm into her ink.
Graham winked at me, then scratched his chin, looking like he was pondering something.
Actually, I might be interested. Do you fix tattoos as well?
Yeah? What do you mean specifically?
I have one that I don't want anymore. It was a mistake, and I'd like to ink over and around it. Change it into something else.
He had a tat? No fucking way.
Let's take a look.
Tig waved his hand, prompting us to follow him. My eyes were glued to Graham's ass, which looked amazing in those jeans. My hands longed to squeeze it. I wondered how he'd react if I did. The muffled sounds of the guests faded into the background when we entered the quiet of the back room. My breathing quickened as Graham slowly lifted his shirt over his head, tousling his hair. It was the first time I had ever seen his rippled chest in the flesh. His physique was beautiful beyond my imagination. It was clear he worked out hard. I couldn't take my eyes off of his six-pack. His skin was so smooth and tanned. It was everything I had fantasized about and more. My hands tingled with a desperate need to feel his skin. My eyes traveled down the thin, happy trail of hair that led into his jeans before my gaze scrolled up again and landed on it. The tattoo on the left side of his torso. I squinted my eyes. It was a name written in script. Genevieve? My heart dropped. Swallowing my jealousy, I specifically chose not to ask the question I was dying to. Who the hell is Genevieve? It felt like my ears were burning. The only thing worse than worrying about Graham being a man whore was the possibility that there was someone out there who had actually meant something to him. Meant enough to permanently mark his body with her name. Tig looked at me, sensing my discomfort, then turned to Graham.
Who's Genevieve?
Graham looked at me when he answered.
She's an ex-girlfriend. Like I said, the tattoo was a mistake.
His expression lacked humor, and it made me even more curious about what might have happened between him and this woman. Tig took out a book that featured all sorts of designs with details that could mask the letters of the name. Graham chose an intricate tribal design. I stood there, mesmerized, listening to the sound of the needle. The tension in the air was thick as Graham would look over at me from time to time. Tig was able to color in and shade over the name so that by the end, it looked like it was never there. The new tat looked super sexy against Graham's olive skin. To be honest, I wanted to run my tongue over it. Tig placed a clear bandage over the design and gave him aftercare instructions before Graham put his shirt back on.
Thanks, man. How much do I owe you?
Tig held out his hands.
Please, it's on the house. I insist. Just take care of my girl. That's all I need from you, nothing else.
Graham looked at me.
I can do that.
Placing his hand on the small of my back, Graham led me through the door and back into the main room.
Can I get you a drink?
He asked. Yeah, I'll take some of that punch over there. Graham returned with two glasses of the spiked juice, and we both gulped them down swiftly. A stream of red liquid dripped down my cleavage. Before I could wipe it off, I felt Graham's long finger running a line up the middle of my chest.
Messy girl,
he said as he licked the punch off of his index finger. That one single swipe practically did me in. I was so incredibly attracted to him, but never had I wanted him as badly as tonight. The casual clothes, the glasses, the way he was looking at me, seeing him shirtless like that, it was all too much. But more than anything, the lingering jealousy over Genevieve was driving me nuts the most. A foreign and uncontrollable sense of possessiveness came over me. My reaction was a wake-up call. I was already in too deep, destined to get hurt. Take that realization, add a little rum punch, and you got one hot mess.
You're deep in thought tonight, Soraya. Tell me what's on your mind.
What felt like a hot flash started to permeate my body. Never in my life had I ever reacted to a man this way. Never had I felt so much fear and desire at the very same time. Certainly, never had the jealousy monster reared its ugly head. I didn't want him to sense it. I needed to cool off. I'll be right back, I said before making my way to the back of the shop. Before I could get very far, I felt a firm hand on my waist. Then, he pulled me into Tig's office and shut the door, backing me against it with his arms locking me in on each side.
You think you're the only one who is fucked up by what's happening here?
He groaned. I stayed silent, trying to catch my breath. There was no light, and he didn't attempt to find one. In the darkness of the office, I could barely see anything. I could only feel his chest against mine and his breath against my lips as he said,
"You're driving me crazy. I need to touch you. Please, just let me taste you just once."
Bending my head back, I pressed his head into my chest as he ran his tongue slowly down my cleavage, moaning over my skin. He pulled the top of my dress down, exposing my breast, and took my nipple into his mouth, sucking so hard that it caused me to squeal. The muscles between my legs were pulsating with need. Even though I wanted him inside of me, I was terrified. I suddenly moved my face away from him and began to cover myself. Panting, he buried his nose in my neck and placed his hand over my heart. He pulled me closer to him.
God, listen to that heartbeat. You want me, I can feel it, but you're so goddamn scared of me, why?
I don't know, I whispered. He pulled back and cupped his hands around my cheeks.
Talk to me. Please, whatever happened to you to make you so distrusting?
I'm just afraid to get hurt.
Who hurt you?
It was hard for even me to understand where this was coming from. I hadn't even had a boyfriend who'd shattered my trust or broken my heart. It made no sense. I'd never really been in love before. The feelings that I had for Graham were new to me, but I didn't want to admit that to him. The one thing I knew for sure was that my father was somehow at the root of my paranoia. So I decided to tell Graham a story that might explain my fear of rejection, although I couldn't say I truly understood it clearly myself. Anything was better than admitting to him that I'd never felt this way about anyone before, though. When I was about 10 years old, my parents divorced. My father ended up marrying a woman from the neighborhood. Teresa was a widow. She had 3 daughters, one of whom was my age and went to my school. Brianna. Anyway, my dad pretty much became their father and spent less and less time with my sister and me as a result. There was this father-daughter rose ceremony and dance that the school was putting on for girls in my age group. The dads were each supposed to buy 12 roses for their daughter and then take pictures together at the dance. Anyway, my mother had asked my father if he was available to take me. He never got back to her. So I ended up showing up at the school, all dressed up and hoping he would turn up. And he did. With Brianna. There she was, holding the big bunch of pink roses in one hand and my father's hand in the other. I ran home crying, and when my mother confronted him, he said that he didn't realize I was interested in going. He said that since Brianna's dad was dead, it was important that he be there for her. He said he thought I would understand. Anyway, this has nothing to do with you, Graham. You asked why I have trust issues, and my father is really the only reason I can think of. He took my face in his hands again and planted a firm and passionate kiss on my lips. My body relaxed into him, and when he pulled away, I longed for him to just keep kissing me.
I'm sorry that happened. That is so incredibly shitty, and it does explain a lot.
Yeah, thank you.
I was pretty much an only child, he said. My father was never in the picture, which might have been better than rejection later on. I don't know.
So it was just you and your mother?
Yes.
How did she die?
Lung cancer, when I was a teenager.
I'm so sorry.
Thank you.
He paused, then said,
it was hard. I vowed never to allow myself to become attached to anyone after that. I didn't ever want to suffer that kind of loss again. My mother's death is a big reason I am the way I am. Closed off and cold. At the same time, it motivated me to be the best that I could be in other ways to make her proud. So, some good and bad came of it.
My stomach churned as I prepared to ask the question I needed an answer to. Did you become attached to Genevieve?
Yes,
he simply said. My heart was palpitating. How long were you with her?
2.5 years.
I see. When I looked down, he placed his hand on my chin and moved my face to meet his eyes in the darkness.
What do you want to know, Soraya? Ask me.
What happened with you and her?
Genevieve took a job with me as a broker right out of school. We were serious. Or so I thought. Anyway, to make a very long story short, I actually started my company with a friend of mine named Liam Gainsworth. Liam, Genevieve, and I worked very closely together. I eventually found out they were having an affair behind my back. Liam went on to start his own company, which is now one of my competitors, and took Genevieve with him.
Wow. That's awful. I don't even know what to say. I'm sorry.
Don't be. It wasn't meant to be.
I know, but I can tell that it hurt you.
I'm here with you, aren't I?
What does that have to do with it?
Because I don't want to be anywhere but here. If anything were different in my life, I might not be. I don't understand it either, Soraya. This, what's happening between us. I can't make any promises. I just know I don't want it to stop.
Neither do I. We'd better go back out before they think we're...
fucking?
Yeah. He buried his face in my neck and chuckled against my neck.
God forbid.
Thank you for being patient with me.
He growled.
Patient isn't the right word.
Maybe not.
As I took his hand to lead him out of the room, he nudged me back for a moment.
Hey.
When I turned to face him, he leaned his forehead against mine.
I'll wait as long as you want me to. I'm not going anywhere.
Thank you.
We were both much more relaxed after our talk. We spent the rest of the night quietly listening to the conversations around us at the party. I leaned my back into Graham, who wrapped his arms around my waist, the warmth of his body balancing out the goosebumps from the contact. I didn't know where this was going, and for the first time I resolved not to analyze it. Chapter 10. Soraya. The next day at the office, they kept coming in droves. Dozens of roses. Pink ones, red ones, yellow ones. A new dozen was delivered every hour. It took me a bit to figure out why he was doing it. It was the story I told him about my father and the rose ceremony. I later found a card that had fallen off of the first dozen that read, "These are long overdue." My heart felt heavy and filled with something unidentifiable all at once. Tonight was the gala I was supposed to be attending with him. It was going to be way out of my comfort zone, and nervous jitters followed me around all day. I picked out two different formal dresses at Bergdorf's on my lunch break. When I got back to the office, there was a plate of Indian food at my desk. The smell of curry was nauseating.
Ida, how did this food get here?
A delivery guy left it. Said it was for you. I thought you ordered it.
I get Indian for you, but you know I hate it.
Then a thought crossed my mind. I took out my phone. Soraya. You didn't order me Indian food, did you? Graham. I did. Soraya. Why? Graham. I thought you liked it. I saw you going to pick it up. Soraya. How is that? You were following me? Graham. It was only one afternoon. I missed your face. I was gonna pull up next to you like Mr. Big, surprise you, and take you out to lunch. Then I saw you rushing out of Masala Madness and figured you already had plans. Soraya. LOL. I was getting lunch for Ida. Indian gives me heartburn. Graham. I need to work on my stalking skills. Soraya. That was really sweet of you, though. Later that afternoon, Graham sent me another text. Graham. Hey, I heard they changed the name of the gala in honor of me. Soraya. Really? Graham. It's now called the Big Blue Ball. Soraya. LOL. Graham. They're giving out swag bags with ice packs and ibuprofen. Soraya. You're crazy. Graham. For you, I am. Soraya. What time are you picking me up? Graham. Holy shit. Am I actually allowed at your door? Soraya. Yes. Graham. 7:30 then. Soraya. I'll need your approval on my attire. I have two dresses on hold at Bergdorf's, and I still can't decide. Graham. You know I'm gonna veto whatever it is, just so I can watch you undress. Soraya. How's your tattoo? Graham. Fine. We can play I'll show you mine, you show me yours if you want later. Soraya. I have a few you haven't seen. Graham. I'm painfully aware of this. Soraya. Maybe if you're good tonight, I'll let you see one. Graham. And if you're good, I'll let you look under the table.
Soraya. L-O-L. Graham.
You're evil, Soraya Venidetta. Taunting me with your tattoos. How the fuck am I supposed to work now?
Soraya. Winky face. After work, I went by Bergdorf's to purchase my dress. I had two on hold and hadn't decided which I liked best. At the fitting room, I gave my name and waited for the salesperson to return with my selections.
Here you go, my dear.
Thank you, but that one isn't mine. I pointed to a gorgeous green dress. It was actually the first dress that had caught my attention earlier in the day, but it was a designer I could never afford. The price tag was almost 10 times the other two put together.
Well, that's the one your husband added this afternoon.
My husband?
I assumed he was your husband. I'm sorry, I didn't ask his name. Boyfriend, perhaps? Not very many men who look like that walk into the women's dress parlor. Or pay the bill, for that matter.
Pay the bill?
The gentleman who added this dress to your selections. He also paid the bill for the green one, and instructed the manager to put any other dresses you like on his account as well. He also had us pick out shoes to go with the green and paid for those as well.
She hung the dresses in a fitting room and disappeared for a moment. When she came back, she opened the box to show me an amazing pair of Louboutins that I could never afford.
I shot off a text before stripping out of my clothes.
Soraya. Do you shop in the ladies' department often?
Graham. That was a first. You should see the items I took with me.
Soraya. You purchased other items?
Graham. Yes. The woman in lingerie looked at me like I was Caitlyn Jenner.
Soraya.
L-O-L. You went to lingerie, too? What did you buy?
Graham. Those purchases you won't get to see so soon, since I won't be seeing them modeled quite yet. Unless you've changed your mind.
The idea of Graham shopping in the lingerie department both amused and aroused me. I pictured him running his hand through his hair in frustration, completely hating that he was doing it, but not being able to stop himself.
Soraya.
The green dress is beautiful, but I can't accept it. It's too much.
Graham. It's final sale. Donate it if you don't like it.
Seriously? The dress was nearly $3,000.
Soraya.
You're crazy, you know that?
Graham. Does it fit?
Soraya. I haven't tried it on yet. The rapid fire of texts we were exchanging came to a halt for a few minutes.
Soraya.
You still there?
Graham. Are you in the fitting room?
Soraya.
Yes.
Graham. I just had a small fantasy of you standing in the fitting room, looking at your gorgeous naked body in the mirror.
Soraya.
And?
Graham. You want to hear more of my fantasy?
Soraya.
I might.
Graham.
I'd like to join you in that fitting room. Bend you over with your hands pressed against the mirror, fingers splayed wide, and take you from behind while you watch us.
You'd still be wearing the shoes I picked out. This time, I was the one who went quiet. I looked in the mirror and actually saw Graham standing behind me. If the illusion was that hot, there was a good chance I'd melt when the real thing happened.
When? I was no longer even attempting to fool myself by saying if.
Eventually, my phone buzzed.
Graham, I know what you're doing.
Soraya,
see you tonight, Mr. Big Prick.
When I arrived at my apartment carrying a garment bag, I noticed a black town car parked outside. As I neared, the uniformed driver got out. Graham's driver.
Ms. Venidetta, Mr. Morgan requested that this be delivered to you.
He handed me two sealed manila envelopes.
What is it? I don't know, ma'am. I was instructed to deliver it, so here I am.
He gave a polite nod and opened the car door.
You have a good afternoon.
My hands were full, so I waited until I was upstairs before attempting to open the envelopes. After hanging my dress, I sat down on my bed and ripped open the first of the packages. Inside was a box of La Riche Alpine Green hair dye. The color was an exact match for the dress. Graham J. Morgan had a serious sweet side. Curious, I tore open the next envelope. It was a box of green Betty Down There hair color with a sticky note that read, I wasn't sure if the carpet matched the curtains. Smiling from ear to ear, I thought to myself, you're going to find out for yourself very soon if you keep this up. The buzzer rang at promptly 7:30. I spoke into the intercom before pressing the button to unbolt the main door downstairs.
Is this celibate in Manhattan?
Unfortunately, yes.
I buzzed him up and unlocked my door to wait. Walking down the hallway from the elevator to my apartment, he took quick, confident strides. Each one made my pulse race a little faster. He was wearing a dark tuxedo and was quite possibly the most gorgeous man I'd ever set my eyes on. There was no doubt in my mind that he could cause traffic jams walking down Manhattan streets dressed like that. I literally licked my lips. While I stood there, salivating, Graham took my face into one hand and squeezed.
You are going to be the death of me looking at me like that.
Then he kissed me until there was no doubt what I was feeling was mutual. I blinked myself back to reality when he released me. I need to get dressed. Come inside.
I haven't been able to think about anything but coming inside since you told me about your doctor's appointment to renew your birth control.
I rolled my eyes at him for being a perv, even though I secretly loved every dirty word. I just need a minute to slip my dress on.
Would you like help with that?
I pointed to a chair in the kitchen. Sit. Stay.
Am I a dog? I'm not above begging.
I disappeared into my bedroom and slipped on the green dress. It was the most expensive thing I've ever owned. Graham wasn't lying when he said the dress was final sale. Otherwise, I wouldn't be wearing it. But I had to admit, the other dresses I picked out couldn't compare to the beauty of the one he had bought. Unlike Graham, who strode toward me with the self-assurance of knowing his place at the top of the food chain, I was a nervous wreck to walk out of my bedroom. The dress was gorgeous. It hugged my every curve and showed off the perfect amount of skin to be sexy without tilting to slutty. Yet I wasn't in my comfort zone. Looking in the mirror, my reflection was beautiful, but what it didn't reflect was me. Whatever doubt I had was almost fully erased when I saw Graham's face. He was sitting at my kitchen table, playing with his phone, and stood when he saw me.
You look fucking incredible.
The dress is incredible. I still can't believe how much you paid for it.
It's not the dress, Soraya. It's the woman wearing it.
That's sweet. Thank you.
Green is most definitely your color.
He reached up and fingered my hair.
I can't see if your tips match with this hairdo.
I pinned my hair up into a French twist and tucked the colorful ends underneath. I smiled. They do, but I didn't want to stick out like a sore thumb. I've never been to a gala before, but something tells me I would be the only one with green in her hair.
You don't like your hair up.
I like it better down, actually.
Turn around. Let me see.
When I complied, Graham slipped the pins that were fastening my thick tresses out. My long hair fell down in waves. He guided me to turn back around.
You'll stick out with it up or down, and it has nothing to do with your hair color.
You don't mind?
Mind? I'm an arrogant asshole. I like it when others envy what I have.
Just give me a second to fix it. I went to the bathroom and smoothed out my hair. I really did like my hair down better. When I returned, Graham took both of my hands.
So? Does it match?
Yes, the color is pretty close, don't you think? I lifted my tips up against the top of my dress. The greens were almost the exact same hue.
I wasn't talking about the dress.
Oh, no. Thank you for the Betty down there, but the curtains don't match.
That's a shame.
I smirked. Really? I thought you might like my setup down there.
Your setup?
I kissed his lips gently, then spoke against them. There's nothing to dye. I'm completely bare down there. Graham was right about one thing. We were certainly attracting attention. Although I doubted any of the women eye-fucking the man I was standing next to even noticed my hair. Graham seemed oblivious as he steered me toward the bar. You seem to have a fan club.
It's more like a hate club. My business is very competitive.
I eyed one woman who was blatantly staring at us as we walked. She was wearing a red dress, and her head was following our every step. Looks more like lust than hate. Graham followed my line of sight. He pulled me closer to his side.
Keep away from that one.
That comment only made me stare longer. Why?
I don't want her tainting your view on me any more than I accomplish on my own.
At the bar, Graham ordered his fancy drink and the wine I had at dinner last week. He got a point for remembering what I liked. While we waited, I looked around the room. The Met was an incredible place. I'd been inside before for exhibitions, but never in this particular hall. The domed ceilings were a work of art in itself. It was overwhelming to take it all in. The people, the venue, the man standing next to me, most of all. Graham handed me my drink. How much money will something like this raise?
I think last year it drummed up $5 million.
I almost choked, sipping my wine. The woman in the red dress who had been staring at us sauntered to the bar.
Hello, Graham.
He nodded. His response was curt, and I felt his body stiffen.
Avery?
Oh, fuck. The woman I called.
Aren't you going to introduce me to your friend?
He drew me even closer to his side.
Actually, no. We were just about to dance, excuse us.
Graham abruptly steered me away from the bar and the woman. I was relieved to get away from her myself, but curious at the relationship. There was a large, mostly empty dance floor on one side of the room. On our way, we made a stop at table number 4 and Graham set down our drinks. Out on the dance floor, Graham pulled me close. I wasn't surprised to find he knew how to dance. The way he led with a strong hand definitely suited his domineering personality.
So, red dress? I take it you two have history?
We do, but it's not what you think.
Meaning what, that you haven't fucked her?
He pulled his head back and his brow arched.
Jealous?
I looked away. The thought of him being with anyone else stirred something irrational inside of me. Graham leaned in and ran his nose along my throat.
I like that you're jealous. It means that you're possessive of me. I feel the exact same way about you.
My eyes met with his. Our gaze held for a long time before he spoke again.
No.
I haven't slept with Avery. Never laid a finger on her. She's not happy with the way I'm currently handling a business acquisition.
Oh.
He leaned in closer, gravelly speaking at my ear. But speaking of fucking, I've had a hard-on since you told me you were bare.
With his hand on my lower back, he pressed me firmly against him. I could feel his erection poking into my hip. The man was attacking all of my senses at once. The sound of his needy voice, the smell that was so male and distinctly him, the touch of his hands on my bare skin. God, I wanted to taste him. It didn't help that the way his body controlled mine as we fluidly swept across the dance floor reminded me how dominating he would probably be in bed. There was an unlocked closet around somewhere nearby. I was sure of it. It would be so easy to give in to him right now. But instead, I forced my usual bitchy self through the haze of lust that threatened to swallow me.
Maybe you should see a doctor about that. Seems like you constantly have an erection. Too much Viagra, perhaps?
I can assure you there is no artificial assistance needed to make my cock swell when I'm around you, Soraya. And I have visited my doctor recently. In fact, just a few days ago. I took some advice from a columnist I follow and prepared myself on the off chance that I'm permitted to break my celibacy vow. I'm clean. And have the papers to prove it.
You sound eager. Are you carrying them on your person right now?
I was joking, but Graham pulled back and patted his jacket pocket over where the inside pocket would be. I chuckled.
Are you serious? You don't actually have them on you, do you?
Of course I'm serious. There is nothing more that I want to do than come inside of you. Not a chance I was going to miss an opportunity because I wasn't prepared if the occasion presented itself. I've been carrying them with me for 3 days.
His admission was bizarrely endearing. Another song came on, and we danced in quiet for a while, our bodies swaying in unison. I leaned my head on his chest and sighed. I like this.
I didn't expect to be honest.
He nuzzled against me.
Me too. I normally hate these things.
My guard was slipping for this man. It didn't take long for me to be reminded to lift it back up and protect myself. We were seated at a large round table set up to accommodate at least a dozen other guests. Graham introduced me to the couples surrounding us on either side, but a few of the chairs were still empty.
So, what do you do? Soraya, is it?
Braxton Harlow sat to my left. He was an older, yet handsome-looking gentleman with silvery hair that stood in stark contrast to his tanned face. Graham was talking business to the man on his other side.
I work for an advice columnist. Ask Ida.
You're a writer. How wonderful.
Not exactly. It's more like I run crappy errands for the writer, and sometimes she lets me take a shot at answering some of the letters we get.
I see.
What do you do?
I own a pharmaceutical company.
You're a legal drug dealer.
He chuckled.
I suppose I am.
Does that mean you're a doctor?
It does.
Well, maybe you can talk to Graham here. He seems to have a medical issue.
Just then, Graham joined our conversation.
I heard my name. Are you two talking about me?
Braxton responded.
Soraya was just about to tell me about a medical issue you're having. Is there something I can help you with, Graham?
Graham squinted at me and then downed the last of his drink.
I don't know. Do you treat blue balls?
At first, the man looked confused, but that quickly changed into a hearty laugh. After that, the three of us fell into easy conversation together. Graham's hand was always on the back of my chair, his fingers lightly tracing a figure eight along one bare shoulder. I was actually beginning to relax and enjoy myself.
right up until I saw a flash of red across the table. Avery was seated directly across from us. Graham and the man she was with did that silent nod thing that men do. "Looks like we're sharing a meal with your friend," I leaned into Graham.
"Ignore her."
That was easier said than done. I felt her glare, even when I wasn't sneaking peeks. For some reason, the woman was enjoying making me feel uncomfortable. She made no effort to speak to anyone else at the table. After dinner, I excused myself to go to the ladies' room. I closed myself in a stall and attempted to figure out the best way to go to the bathroom without dipping my expensive dress in toilet water, or touching the seat, or dropping my purse, or falling forward as I hovered in 5-inch stilettos. I would have thought it was a much easier task. The restroom had been empty when I walked in. I heard the entrance door open, then close, and then the clickety-clack of heels stopped somewhere in the vicinity of my stall. My intuition told me who was on the other side. Taking a deep breath, I stepped out, and a flash of red immediately assaulted me. Avery was lining her lips in the mirror, but her gaze was set on me as I walked out.
"If it isn't Graham Morgan's latest plaything."
"Is this how you get your kicks? Following women into the restroom to speak ill about their dates?" She rubbed her lips together to even out the fiery red color, blotted on a tissue, and then capped her lipstick.
"I'm providing a service to womankind by warning women about that man."
"What's the matter? You don't like the way he conducts his business, so you need to warn me off?" Her mouth spread into a malicious smile.
"Is that what he told you? That I simply don't like the way he conducts his business?"
Hating, feeling like she knew something I didn't, I said nothing. Instead, I washed my hands and took my own lipstick out. When I was all done, she was still standing there. I folded my arms over my chest.
"Well, get on with it. Tell me what you are dying to enlighten me with."
She took a few steps, stopping behind me to study my reflection in the mirror. Then she spoke directly into my eyes.
"On second thought, you're not worth my time. Eventually you'll figure it out on your own. Or maybe you can ask Graham why he is set on destroying my best friend's husband's company."
I took a minute to compose myself after Avery walked out. She was every bit as big of a bitch as when I called her that first day I found Graham's phone on the train. I wanted to chalk her warning up to fierce competition between rival companies, but that didn't sit right with me. It was personal for that woman in some way. Graham was waiting for me outside the bathroom.
"Everything okay? I saw Avery follow you in."
"Fine." I forced a smile. After a few steps, I decided I needed to know more. "Can I ask you something?"
"Of course."
"Who is Avery's best friend?" Graham raked a hand through his slicked back hair.
"Her best friend is my ex, Genevieve."
Chapter 11. Graham. Something had changed after Soraya's visit to the ladies' room last night. Before that, she was being her usual sarcastic self, charming the pants off a 60-year-old pharmaceutical researcher by being nothing other than who she is. After, though, she was quiet and withdrawn. When we arrived back at her apartment, she didn't invite me in, and her kiss was missing the usual fire that burned between us. Afraid to push, I waited to see what would happen the next day. Nothing had happened. And here I was sitting in my office on Saturday afternoon staring at a pile of prospectuses. My concentration had gone to shit since that woman stormed into my life. I picked up my phone, then tossed it back on my desk. By 3 o'clock I had repeated the motion 20 fucking times. Eventually I grumbled to myself what a pussy I was and thumbed off a quick text. "Graham, we survived the two events. Do we still have a deal?" I stared at the damn phone until the dots started to jump around. My anxiety level grew as they started, then stopped, then started again. No thought was necessary to text back that our deal of exclusivity was sealed. What are you thinking, Soraya Venidetta? Soraya, are you sure that's what you want? There was no stopping as I texted my response. Graham, it's what I've wanted.